This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everybody, welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast, and it's another stateside special, I should say, there. Joe Thomas, the only correspondent with the Blues throughout their North American trip. He's now moved on to Minneapolis, enjoying the sights and sounds of the Twin Cities there ahead of Everton's fixture with Minnesota United Wednesday evening, going into the early hours of Thursday for us back home. And also joined by Adam Jones, and like myself, back in Merseyside. I believe it's actually similar temperatures out there, Joe. But how was Saturday night? Obviously, the first friendly match of the Frank Lampard's first summer in charge of Everton. Ultimately, it was a 2-0 defeat to Arsenal, but plenty to learn, I imagine, from that fixture.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, it was a kind of bizarre experience being there. Obviously, we're in America, so it's very much like the American version of how sports are done. And, you know, things like the pre-match stuff was just really interesting to watch and quite enjoyable, to be honest. We've got, you know, whole stadium stands for the national anthem. You've got fireworks coming out the top of the stands. You've got planes flying over the top. You've got the Everton players emerging from the tunnel by themselves to Zed cars with smoke machines billowing around them. I mean, personally, I think we could probably adapt some of that for Goodison Park. I think, why can't we have, or certainly when we get to Bramley Moor, why can't we have fireworks coming out the top of the stands? On the pitch, be perfectly honest, it was less enjoyable. I think it feels like it's been a shortened summer. It doesn't feel like the end of last season was that long ago, but obviously it finished on a high within context. Obviously, I think at the start of last season, you said staying up would become the main aim. Obviously, everybody would have been disappointed with that, but given where Everton found themselves, it ended up being a success, and we finished with positivity. The first game of pre-season was not about form, it was about fitness. And I think it was about, to a degree, experimentation, to a degree. You know, we have to remember that Frank Lampard only came in January, and there are a number of players who he just hasn't seen anything of when it comes to playing 90-minute matches, the likes of Nkunku and Gbamin among those. So it was never really going to be about the result as such. But for the first half in particular, I think there were, you know, a few concerns. I think it just was a bit of a reminder that even after the break, and even after, obviously, some of those players who dealt with injury issues throughout last season might have had a chance to recover a bit more. But obviously, Everton is still a work in progress, and I think it'll be a case of patience at the start of the season. But there'll be a lot more work that'll be done over the course of the next few weeks. But this is going to be a gradual build, because obviously it's still the same squad, which perhaps has some of the same vulnerabilities that that existed at the parts of last season.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, as Joe's alluded to there, it's more about fitness than form at this stage. But what sort of takes did you bring back from that first fixture? And, I mean, were you concerned by what you saw to any degree?
I think perhaps the only thing that would concern me is Everton's still looking pretty weak on set pieces. And I think, you know, that's something that we've talked about for a long time on this podcast now. You know, there seemed to be a brief sort of period a couple of years ago where Everton seemed to sort out their issues. But this has been a really long-standing problem that, you know, numerous managers haven't really been able to solve with Everton squads in the past. And, you know, perhaps that's something that is going to be worked on a little bit more over the course of the summer. But, you know, that's something that you imagine they can work on. Well, they probably were working on throughout the end of last season as well. So the fact that the players still don't seem to be picking up, you know, sort of the basics of whatever set piece system, especially defensively, that the coaching team are trying to put down, that was maybe the only little bit of a concern for me. As you say, it's more about fitness than anything else at this stage, isn't it? You know, I wasn't expecting a side that narrowly avoided relegation last season to suddenly turn things around, especially after, you know, their only signing was a free transfer from Burnley, and they've lost their best player over the course of this summer as well. So, you know, it was always going to take time for, you know, these sort of intricate bit of play and whatever you might think like that. You know, it's always going to take time across the summer for that to really show itself. I think, and you know, it's not meant to be perfect at this stage of the summer in terms of, you know, strategic play and, you know, coaching and stuff like that. So there's a lot of time that can still be worked on with this. I think the second half showed a lot more promising signs than the first half. Some of those youngsters that came on at halftime in particular, I think, will have given Frank Lampard, you know, some intriguing food for thought. I think all of them were actually very good in their own sort of right. When they were introduced into the fray, and you know, they stood up to what was, you know, still a tough test against Arsenal at the end of the day. Arsenal, I think that was their third pre-season match of the summer already, so they were always going to be ahead in their preparations. So, you know, the fact that Everton were given a real competitive match, as shown by, you know, James Tarke obviously getting into a bit of fisticuffs towards the end of the game, getting it ended a tiny bit early. Yeah, the fact that Everton were given sort of a competitive game, I think, is the most important thing there. Given a right run around by a team that really like to dominate possession. So, yeah, I think it gave me a lot more positives than it gave negatives, to be honest, because I was never really going to be looking at the overall performance or the display in too much detail. It was more about what Everton are going to learn from that. And I think the test that Arsenal gave them, I think it'll stand them in good stead for the rest of the summer.
Yeah. And Joe, what about the tactical formation? Because obviously there's been a lot of talk of whether he's going to be reverting to a flat back four or this back three that Frank seems to favour. He did go with the three, but are you able to describe how it sort of lined up in front of that three? Because it was an interesting midfield combination.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting one, because I think at the back end of last season, obviously the priority was getting results. And with the players he had at his disposal, including with the injury issues that he had, I think everyone can understand why Frank got to a position where he was playing, you know, three centre-backs and playing in a way that obviously conceded a lot of possession and trying to kind of hit teams on the break and absorb a lot of pressure first. I think obviously the hope is from everyone, I think Frank included in this, is that things can be a bit more progressive going forward. But ultimately, he has the same personnel. And at the minute, he has a squad which has got, well, I mean, its strongest area is its centre-backs. You know, he's got, even with Braithwaite moving out to PSV, he's got a huge amount of options there. Obviously, Tarkowski came in, and then there's other players around him. It was a kind of an intriguing style of play on Saturday in front of him. Obviously, you've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who was essentially the focal point of the attack. But behind him, they almost lined up as a four, because obviously, you know, Dele Alli isn't really a wide midfielder. Mm. You know, and he had Tom Davis and Damari Gray and that in there as well. It was almost hard to kind of see what the intent was to some extent, because Arsenal pinned them back so much. You know, Decore, the other midfielder, certainly played a kind of the box-to-box role that we knew he was in the thick of it on the edge of both areas. But I wouldn't read too much into... I think what he was probably doing with his formations on Saturday was trying to basically give as many players an opportunity to play in something similar to what their preferred position would be, so we could just have a look at them. Mm-hmm. I don't think the 5-4-1, which we kind of went with the other day, would probably be the main one. Certainly, because I think as we saw similar problems emerge to the end of last season, where essentially, and partly because of the quality opposition, partly because of the game time they'd already had, you end up with Calvert-Lewin just really being stranded up there by himself. And that was a feature of last season, which was kind of mitigated by the fact that Richarlison was just such an absolute dynamo that he almost played two roles in that team and he linked the midfield to the attack even when there was a gulf between them, just because of how much running he'd do and how much fighting he would do. So I think when we look back on Saturday, obviously it was intriguing to see five at the back, obviously with three centre backs. I think Frank was quite telling in his comments afterwards that this is a style that he perhaps doesn't want to play if he can avoid it. But at the minute, with the personnel he's got available, that's probably what he has to lean towards at the moment. And obviously, I think it's also important just saying that that first half, obviously, it was disappointing. But again, it wasn't. It was a mix and match of teams for 45. Obviously, players that you'd expect to be in that first in that starting 11, come the start of the season, were saved for the second half as well. So the experimental element was in both halves. So tactically, I probably wouldn't read too much into it, other than the fact that well, it was quite clear that they're certainly in the market for some midfielders, a number six. Whether it be a number six that emerges from the academy and has a breakthrough year, or whether it be a number six that can be, you know, found and brought in, I think there's a gap there for a kind of a holding midfielder. So there's an opportunity there for someone to take it. And as Adam says, just then the young players that came, that second 45 was quite different. And some of these young players, I thought Stanley Mills was excellent in particular. You know, Lewis Warrington looked composed on the ball. And Reece Welch made a couple of decent interventions as well. So, I mean, there was promise from that aspect as well.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You've both mentioned the young players. Going back to you, Adam, you obviously watched a lot of the under-23s last season. Your capacity with the Echo, and you'll have seen more than most, really. I mean, we mentioned Billy Crellin probably only got his chance. Obviously, Asmir Begovic had the injury, so he got an opportunity there. Stanley Mills mentioned, Reece Welsh, Lewis Warrington. Do you think it could be an opportunity for the some of these players this coming season, given that what Frank Lampard did at Chelsea?
I don't see why not, to be honest. I think Welsh in particular is quite interesting to me now, especially now that Jarrod Branthwaite has gone on loan to PSV, which I think is a really good loan move for him in itself. I think he's going to, you know, be able to hone in on his actual style of football by going to the Dutch league rather than going to somewhere like the Championship. I think it just suits him down to the ground a lot better. But in turn, I think that does open up a potential for another young centre-back to perhaps stake their claim in the first team sort of squad. And Reece Welch is somebody who's been training with the first team, particularly for, you know, months and months now. He's almost a regular at Finch Farm with the senior squad. As Joe quite rightly said, I think he made some really vital interventions throughout the second half against Arsenal. I think he just carries himself like a first team player. Whenever you watched him for the 23s last year, you know, there was a selection of those 23s players who you just think to yourself, all right, well, they're already too good for this level of football. Branthwaite was certainly one of them when he was playing down there. And Welch, you know, fast became one of them as well. You could see that he was benefiting from playing with the first team. His speed of thought is very quick when he's on the ball. He reads the game very well for somebody of his age. You know, he's obviously got the physical attributes about him as well. I think he's just got a lot of talent to show. So, you know, Frank Lampard will obviously look into that. He'll probably look at how comfortable Reece looked when he did play against, you know, what was still a tough test in that second half against Arsenal. And I think, you know, particularly now that Branthwaite's gone, there might be a couple of opportunities opening up for him there. Stanley Mills is an interesting one because, you know, Frank Lampard's comments after the game seem to suggest that he does see him as sort of a wing back, and if not a wing back, maybe perhaps at like a number eight in midfield. He did play wing back a little bit for the 23s last season, but he was more used as a winger. Which is, you know, it's quite interesting. I think his attacking attributes are there for everybody to see whenever you do get a chance to look at him a bit more regularly. His defensive work certainly improved for the 23s last year. I think once he got his positioning right as a wing back, then, you know, I think he showed in that little 45 minutes that he got against Arsenal, he's not one to back down from any sort of challenges or anything like that, which I think is always promising to see. So it'd be interesting to see if even he gets a couple of chances, depending on it. Well, it goes back to formation, I suppose. It depends on what formation the Lampard's going to play. If we are going to move to a sort of three in midfield, will Stanley Mills see himself as one of the, you know, potential box-to-box midfielders at some point further down the line. I think it's possible, but I think maybe he'd be competing with Lewis Warrington, weirdly enough, in that in that sort of role, because that's the kind of position that Warrington was playing when he was on loan at Tranmere last season, and he got a lot of joy from that. You know, he was playing more as a defensive midfielder for the 23s last year, but he got that sort of new opportunity at Tranmere to play that little bit further forward, and he seemed to enjoy it a lot more, enjoyed getting in and around the box a little bit more. So, yeah, I think there could be interesting opportunities for a lot of youngsters, and that's not even including the likes of, you know, Lewis Dobbin, for example, who didn't get on the pitch against Arsenal. It'd be very interesting to see what the next sort of year holds for him as well. So, yeah, like Lampard, as you say, is somebody who's brought through young talent at Chelsea, whether that was because it was forced upon him, given Chelsea's transfer issues at the time or not. Well, I think that's a debate to be had, I suppose. But I think throughout his time at Everton, he's never shied away from bringing through these youngsters when they've deserved it. So, you know, if they can keep performing on the training pitch and they keep grabbing their chances like they did against Arsenal, then, you know, I think the opportunities are certainly there for them when the season starts.
Yeah, and Joe, I mean, you've mentioned the one new signing they have brought in already, James Tarkowski, showing that sort of competitiveness that we all hoped to see from him, you know, if in a controlled way, hopefully. Jordan Pickford, proud moment for him again, leading the team out as captain. There's been shouts already that Tarkowski's a potential Everton captain. You know, he's only just started with the Blues. What sort of debut was it? And did you get many hints then that it would be the right sort of player that sort of fill that void for Everton that's been lacking in recent years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the thing with Tarkowski is we've all been able to watch him for so long that we know exactly what he brings to a team.
Yeah.
So there probably isn't really any mystery to him. You know, we know that he is a strong player. You know, he can take no nonsense. He can fight for himself and fight for those around him. He's obviously got a lot of leadership qualities as well. But he has aggression, but it's controlled aggression.
Yeah.
You know, he's intelligent with it. He knows what he's doing. Obviously, we saw that in the way that he stuck up for Stanley Mills in the closing minutes. And I think that kind of aggressive confidence that is still controlled is something that would really benefit that Everton side this season. I think last season, Everton really struggled to impose themselves on teams, not just tactically, but also physically. A lot was said about a lack of leaders, which the more we hear as the dust has settled from last season, the more you kind of start to question a little bit. You know, it sounds like there were this huge personality. Obviously, we all know about what's been said about Seamus Coleman, but Pickford, you know, he really came to the fore himself, and some of the players behind the scenes as well. Andros Townsend seems to have been quite pivotal. I suppose the problem was getting those players on the pitch because, you know, Townsend was injured, Coleman was in and out, and, you know, Pickford's obviously at the back. It's going to be a really interesting one to see if Coleman misses the start of the season. And, you know, obviously it sounds like he's touch and go as he recovers from the surgery that he had a couple of weeks ago. It'll be interesting who Frank goes forward, give the captain's armbands. Obviously, Pickford is, you know, obviously going to start. It's very difficult to see how Tarkowski doesn't go straight into that back two or back three, whatever it is, by the end of, or by August the 6th. So you have two contenders there straight away, which will only be a positive thing, I think, for Everton. I think having the consistency of someone like Tarkowski, who should be there for 30 games plus next season if everything goes well. He's done that 5 years in a row in the Premier League for Burnley. And, you know, one of the things that undermined Everton last season was the fact that there were so many injuries, so the starting 11 kept on changing. Everton need a core of players throughout that team that are there for, you know, game in, game out, and hopefully for leaders to be among them. And then Pickford and then Tarkowski, you already start to see a, you see a spine start to emerge there. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin will be a focal point at the top. And if somebody could emerge in the centre midfield as a standout leader, you could take that forward, then I think that would really help as well. So I think, you know, Tarkowski, there were a lot of positives. There were no surprises with Tarkowski, but it was still good to see him doing what we know he can do, just in a blue shirt.
Yeah. And Adam, we obviously heard Frank Lampard's comments about a desire for a number six after the game. You mentioned the youngsters there, but obviously there were the players who'd come back from loan spells. Niels Nkunku, who'd been a standard liaison over in Belgium, and Jean-Philippe Gabamin. I mean, a £25 million signing spell over there in Russia in recent months. I mean, you could, I say could, have a ready-made number six there, ready to go. A huge surprise. But is there any way back for somebody like him? I mean, he certainly had the ability before he came to Everton, and we just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it continues to intrigue me, this, because when I read those comments from Frank Lampard after the Arsenal game, that I did instantly think, oh, that's a bit of a punch in the gut to Gabamin, surely, because we've said on this podcast for, you know, last few months now, that Gabamin is the only real number six mould that we've got. You know, Alan has been playing there, and I think he can play there quite well on occasion, but he's not really that sort of mould of player. But when we signed Jean-Philippe Gabamin back in 2019, that's what he was meant to be. He was meant to be essentially the replacement in the squad for Idrissa Gueye. Like, now, he wasn't meant to be the exact same sort of, you know, style of player as Idrissa Gueye, but he was meant to take up that sort of defensive midfield role in the squad. Obviously, we know the reasons why that hasn't happened, but, you know, it'd be interesting to maybe speak to Gabamin about this, because, you know, it'd be interesting to see where his head was at when he was playing well on loan for CSKA Moscow. He was getting minutes under his belt, which is something that he hasn't been able to do for a sustained period of time for quite a while now. So it'd be interesting to see if he was thinking to himself, oh, okay, this is me playing my way back into Everton's plans, or maybe he's trying to play his way into a move, who knows. But, you know, those comments from Frank Lampard seem to suggest that he's not really thinking of Jean-Philippe Gabamin as being that defensive midfielder. And if you're not thinking of him as that defensive midfielder, then what are you going to do with him for the season? Like, essentially, I just don't think there's any point in keeping him around if you're not going to use him in a sort of number six role. I don't think he necessarily works. I think he did all right against Arsenal, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he necessarily works in a midfield too, especially at the Premier League level. I just don't think he's naturally mobile enough to be able to get around the pitch. Well, he could prove me wrong now that he's had got himself up to match fitness at CSKA, but from what I've seen of him, I don't think he's naturally mobile enough to get around the pitch at a Premier League level. In a midfield too, I think he does need an extra body in there with him to actually get the best out of him. If he was going to be playing in midfield three, if he wasn't playing in that number six role, maybe you could see him in a box-to-box position. I'm not really sure how good he is in and around the box. Yeah. Perhaps he shows that kind of thing in training, and maybe that's what Frank Lampard is looking at, but I do highly doubt it. And I think those Lampard comments seem to suggest to me that maybe a move is going to be on the cards for Gabamin, and whether that's going to be another loan or maybe looking for a permanent switch this time. I don't think that would necessarily come as a surprise to anybody that, you know, after 3 years of essentially stagnation after his move, obviously not his fault in a lot of senses, but, you know, it is 3 years still of stagnation. It was a lot of money that Everton spent on him, and they still need that replacement for Idrissa Gueye's influence in the squad 3 years on. So I think it would probably be best for all parties to just, you know, to cut ties here and find a new move for him. And, you know, hopefully he'll be able to have similar game time as he got at CSKA Moscow somewhere else. And, you know, I think that would be certainly a benefit to him.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Joe, we've mentioned already that you are the only reporter out there for the entirety of the Blues' time in the US. Just want to ask you It was a big occasion for the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, having this game over there. Just shoot your thoughts on how that went for the traveling Evertonians, and now that the fact that you've moved on to the Midwest there to Minnesota, just what it's like there and how things are settling in over there.
Yeah, well, so the only dedicated Everton reporter that'll be there here for the whole trip. That's certainly the case. Baltimore was really interesting because, I mean, the players are based in Washington, D.C., and obviously, you know, it's the U.S. cap, so there's a lot going on there, and a sports team's visit, a British sports team visit, isn't as significant as it might be elsewhere. It's very much a business, professional-focused city, and Evan have been able to kind of almost enjoy a little bit of time in the background, really, which would have suited them, you know, just a little bit of freedom to kind of move around without being mobbed by people or anything like that, and just have a calm start to pre-season, just almost behind the scenes. You then get to Baltimore and the place was just full of Blues. You know, yeah. I got into my hotel and then a group of Blues followed me in. Here the facility was just a constant case of seeing people in Everton shirts, and then walking around. I mean, I actually went on the Saturday morning to one of the local parks where there was a gathering of Blues supporters. So you had people like the Baltimore Blues and Carolina and South Carolina Blues, all the different fan groups coming from all that, you know, places from New York and all sorts, kind of making the effort to come over and meet like-minded people that had all fallen in love with Everton. And it was great to see because, you know, it's clearly a lot of passion for Everton out here. Mm-hmm. And then that was replicated on Saturday afternoon before the game. You walk around the harbour area, the tourist area. There was, again, just loads of Everton shirts. Obviously, some have made the journey over from Merseyside, but a lot of them have travelled across the US. And before the game, they had a tailgate and an event inside the, I think it's the Firefighters Union. And it was just packed. Like, there was just hundreds of Everton fans all just absolutely buzzing to be there. The Blue Pyro was back, which my lungs probably weren't too pleased for. But it was great to see. I mean, there were a lot of Arsenal fans there as well. It was quite strange, actually, because I was a little bit surprised because throughout the morning and afternoon and, you know, around the tourist area, it was the Blues dominating, and we turned up at the ground. And even Arsenal had their own kind of pre-match event, but when I went past, it didn't look anywhere near as busy as the Everton one. And in fact, by the time we got to closer to kickoff, there were a few Arsenal fans seeping into the Everton one. I don't know if that was because it was better or just because of friendship groups dividing their time between the two, perhaps. Everton, obviously, they finished their ninth trip since 2004. They're clearly paying a lot of attention to the North American market. And yeah, there's a lot of Premier League clubs are battling to do that. And obviously, Everton's success ultimately, you know, no one's stupid, is going to largely depend on success on the pitch. They need to start winning stuff if it's going to start capturing, you know, the hearts and minds of huge swathes of American football supporters who haven't yet made their mind up. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely fair to say that Everton have a real footprint over here. Obviously, that comes from, you know, the history, comes from expats, comes from all sorts. But also, you know, a lot of American football fans, their entry points into the market come via an Everton route. You know, a lot of them support Everton from Landon Donovan's time there. A lot of them from Tim Howard. Tim Howard's one of the kind of the most omnipresent personalities, I think, on American TV when it comes to football. And then even through things like last week, there's the Men in Blazers podcast, which is hugely popular over here for Premier League football fans. Co-host of that, Roger Bennett's a massive Blue. He's from Merseyside. So, you know, there's a lot of work being done to grow Everton over here. And, you know, it's clearly having some success. Now, it would obviously have a lot more success, I think, if Everton become more successful on the pitch. Hopefully that will come, but the efforts aren't being wasted. You know, there's a big Blue support out here, and it's a very passionate and knowledgeable one, and it's, you know, been a real privilege to get to speak to so many of those people and meet them and see them in action since we've been over here.
Yeah, And Adam, in this, what is it, a record-breakingly hot day potentially for the UK, a lot of people might want to corn it, and it seems that see where I'm going with this one. Everton might be no different, or should I say Cornet, as I imagine they would pronounce it there over in France, where he obviously came from the French league. The Ivory Coast international, Maxwell Cornet, the latest name being linked with the Blues. I mean, it's an intriguing one, isn't it? Because we're going back to Burnley again, and we obviously got the whole issue with them and James Tarkowski and the relegation battle. But he was a player who really had a big impact in his first season in English football, despite the struggles of the team he was playing in, and not least that game at Turf Moor that all three of us went to, unfortunately, and scored that late winner that night.
Yeah. I think I saw a stat that he only played about 51% of Burnley's minutes in the Premier League last season. So the fact that he still managed to get 9 goals was, you know, pretty impressive. I think it was only one behind Richarlison in terms of Premier League numbers in that respect. Mm-hmm. So, I think he is a really interesting sort of prospect, isn't he? Because I think on the pitch, you can see exactly why Everton would be interested in him. He's very versatile. I think for a start, he can play off both flanks, can play through the middle. He can play left back as well, I think, at some stage last season for Burnley. So he offers cover in a wide sort of variety of positions. I think he's creative. I think he's actually got a little bit of consistency in front of goal. It's important that Everton have seen that he can adapt well to the Premier League as well. I think he's got the kind of fitness levels that Everton would want him to have for the Premier League, because, you know, Everton want to be, well, Frank Lampard said he wanted Everton to be robust. He wants Everton. I think it probably makes sense that he'd want Everton to be a bit more high pressing, bit quicker with themselves in possession. And I think Cornet hopefully will be able to fit into that mould. I think the interesting thing, as you alluded to, is the fact that it's Burnley. Burnley have got some issues behind the scenes with Everton and their finances, haven't they? So it's very interesting to see how negotiations might go in this sort of deal. Reports have recently suggested that Everton's first approach was a loan with an option to buy at the end of it, and that's reportedly been rejected. I think the Daily Mail are reporting today that Everton are going to prepare like a second bid, which would be just a permanent deal from the off. There's rumours that there's a 17 million release clause, but I think that would all depend. For me personally, it all depends on whether like that release clause would have to be paid all up front. I just don't think Everton have got the capacity at the minute to be spending 17 million on somebody up front in this transfer window. I think they just need to be a little bit smarter. Maybe it'll take a bit more time to go through deals like this in this window, but this is them reaping what they sow. Essentially, this is all down to the mistakes and the failures that they've made over the course of the last few years. The money that's been absolutely squandered over the last few years is coming back to haunt them a little bit, and they've got to be a little bit cleverer in this transfer window to try and get these sort of deals. They can't just go to Burnley, oh yeah, go on, we'll give you the 17 million that you want. You know, it does take a little bit of negotiation, a little bit of haggling. And, you know, I have seen a few people a little bit worried in that sense, that, you know, Everton might be losing out on their targets. Obviously, we've seen reports today as well that Armando Broja's reportedly close to joining West Ham United as well. Another one that is, you know, in quotation marks, one that got away for Everton. But if he was going to have cost 25 million up front, that's too much money. As it stands, it's just too much money. So, yeah, Everton are being forced to be a little bit more clever in this transfer window, I suppose, with the way that they do things. But I'm not necessarily opposed to that. I think essentially Everton should have been doing this years and years ago, trying to negotiate the best price for someone. It seems simple, but Everton just weren't doing that a few years ago, and this is the price that they've got to pay now. But, you know, if there is a sort of amicable deal that can be made for somebody like Cornet, I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't think he's going to be, you know, necessarily a like-for-like Richarlison replacement, but you can certainly see that he'd replace a lot of the influence that Richarlison has left behind. So I'd be all for it if the price was right.
Yeah. I mean, Joe, we've mentioned already, this is now the second and final leg of Everton's US trip that you've moved on to, the game against Adrian Heath's Minnesota coming up. You spoke to Frank Lampard. I mean, did he seem concerned to you? Is he frustrated with this transfer situation? I mean, how do you see it playing out? Farhad Moshiri, of course, the owner, came out and said judges at the end of the transfer window.
Yeah, and like we said in the last podcast, I think that's fair. You know, I think we're operating in a changing world with football finances, and I think that, you know, I mean, on Cornet, I think he's a sensible deal. You know, and I'd like to think that, I mean, I know there are issues with profit and sustainability, but, you know, if he does have a £17.5 million release clause, I think that's something that Everton would probably be able to find a way to meet that if they need to. I think the issue is Everton can't spend anything over this summer. They just probably have a very limited kind of, they probably have a very set budget, and it's a case of what they use the money towards. And, you know, if they pay everything up for Cornet up front, then that perhaps then eats into, you know, a second signing for a similar price, or, you know, or the fees that you can pay to secure loan deals. You know, they certainly don't have multiple, you know, tens of millions of pounds to you know, signings that they can make. I think with, you know, with Cornet, he, like Adam says, there are a lot of positive attributes there. You know, he definitely strengthens the side. I think it's just sensible business. I think, you know, I think Richarlison's a better player. And I know they're not the same player, but I think they're quite similar players. Would you say, you know, if you work on Richarlison as a £60 million package, as we've reported, and you work on Cornet as a £17.5 million, one if he's got the release clause that we think he has, would you say Richarlison's £42.5 million better than Cornet? I probably wouldn't. You know, I think that's, you know, if you come away with Cornet in a £42.5 million profit, even if it is that is then going into sorting out the finances rather than all being spent, I think that's actually some pretty good business. But obviously there needs to be wiggle room for further business as well. You know, which I don't think Frank's under any illusions about that. I don't think any of the supporters are either. But I do think that, yeah, when you look at the transfer market at the moment, it's probably been quite a few deals that are almost holding up the market. And I think, you know, you look how long, you know, Rafinha to Barcelona dragged on for, or, you know, you look at the situation, you know, Brozier and where he's going. Obviously, you know, Chelsea are a club that have been all over the place this summer. You haven't have to be savvy. And I think for a big part of the situation they're currently in is for perhaps going for players without having done due diligence, perhaps being, you know, attracted to the shiny player with the, you know, with the silver boots and the big price tag, and, you know, not doing their homework and just going straight for it. You know, the result of that is where we are right now. I think it'll be difficult. While I can understand why supporters would want to see players coming in as soon as they possibly could, and why I can understand that they'd want them to be before the season rather than during the transfer window after the season, yeah, I think there has to be a degree of pragmatism. And I think it would be a little bit hypocritical, perhaps, to be criticising the past policy of, you know, of spending everything, you know, big sums on questionable players, and then also criticising what is hopefully a case of a slower start to the window because of due diligence, sensible operating, trying to negotiate in a way that favours Everton at the moment, even if that does mean that players come later, which hopefully the silence, the light silence at the moment is representative of. Hopefully it's not a case of there's not things happening. I think things are very, very busy. Frank said things are very busy between him and Kevin Falwell at the moment, and hopefully that's busy with making progress and, yeah, identifying targets and having talks with clubs and hopefully getting some towards the, you know, getting some over the line. So, you know, I mean, I think there will be incomings. Hopefully they'll be first choice targets rather than having to move on to second and thirds. I think Everton understand that they need new players. How many? You know, I don't know where their thinking is on that, but I'd be shocked if nobody else came in the coming weeks.
Okay, well, I've seen, like we've mentioned, this is one more game to go in the US. That's another late night for Adam. And Joe's just now adjusting to a new time zone as well. But yeah, Minnesota United versus Everton, officially Wednesday night over there, but it's 1 a.m. in the morning for us. So follow the Echoes Live blog on that one. And then it's on to a very different sort of change of scene next weekend on a Sunday when Everton go to Blackpool. So there's plenty to look forward to there. And another summer trip by the seaside for our correspondents and the Everton travelling fans. So it's been the Royal Blue Podcast. I've been your host, Chris Beasley. I've been joined by Adam Jones and Joe Thomas out there in the USA. And a good afternoon to all of you, and keep safe in that sunshine.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.